Well, good afternoon, everyone. It feels like a while since I've picked up a mic, I can tell you. But welcome to this podcast. It's a cycling podcast. It's going to be pushed through my blog on RoadCC, a technological wonder and an award-winning website now. Congratulations to the guys on that. And in reality, having been looking around the internet for cycling podcasts, I've seen a few, I love a few, there's a few that I subscribe to, but I thought, why not give it a go? And it might be that this is once a month, it might be this is the one and only, but it just it feels great to be back behind the mic in this high-tech studio, which is actually a laptop, an Olympus dictaphone, and it's in my conservatory. But, you know, having said that, little acorns and all those sort of things. So, yeah, welcome aboard. For those of you who don't know my internet podcasting history, the last one was a football one. I won't even degenerate into to telling you about the club or what happened to them. Not a pretty picture. But the same kind of principle applies. This is going to be fairly rough. It's going to be unedited. There's not even an opening set of opening titles yet, although you know, maybe we'll work on that. But it is just going to be a bit of chat about cycling and what's going on and where I see it. I don't think I'll be sat warbling for 40 minutes, so you know, if you've got a 15-20 minute commute into work, hopefully this will fill a little bit of space on your iPod, but don't have it turned up too loud in traffic. So how did I get here? Well, the RoadCC website offered a vehicle for my thoughts and comments with my blog, which has been going for probably a couple of years nearly now, and the website's superb, and I've mentioned this a few times and thought about it a few times, and nothing's really happened, and now I've got a couple of hours free on a Saturday. I thought, well, okay, let's try and pull something together. For those of you who don't use the website, there is a link on the Podomatic page that this podcast is stored on, so please get along the website, register, and get involved in the competitions and the chat and stuff over there. It'll be good to have you aboard. As I say, it's an award-winning website. BikeBiz has awarded it Consumer Website of the Year, so you can obviously trust the reviews and the gear videos and stuff over there, so do get involved. Okay, so on the topics on the podcast today, we're going to talk a little bit about my inspiration website and podcast, which is the Real Peloton. Now, regular readers of the blog will know that I've been trying to pin down Matt Rendell from Real Peloton, and there's probably about as much chance of me getting him on this podcast, maybe. You never know. I can't get Skype to work, though. If anyone's any good at those sort of technical things, you need to get in touch, really. So, the Real Peloton podcast, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant podcast. Download it, subscribe to it on iTunes, and get it. But whilst waiting for him to come and do a written interview for the website, I thought, well, okay, let's get moving and get pushing on. Interesting that obviously Matt himself is probably most famous for his depiction of Marco Pantani in his book, which is probably one of the best cycling titles that I've read. Although at the moment I've just finished Will Fotheringham's Falling Angel, the story of Fausto Coppi, which pretentiously is not just about cycling. I do sound pretentious when I'm saying this, but it is actually quite an expansive book that talks a lot about Italy and talks a lot about the world actually post the Second World War. Fascinating insight into Coppi. Fascinating insight into the way that cycling was used as a motivational and morale boosting propaganda almost to reunify the Italian people. You really should read it for that and that alone, but also it's also got the fascinating subtext that obviously Coppi was involved with a mistress, and the story of how the nation almost as one turned on him, and how he was kind of ostracized and demonized to almost to the extent where there was the threat of jail for him simply not spending time with his wife almost. It's a really sad and an almost heartwarming tale about how him and the lady involved, whose name actually escapes me, Julia or Juliana, how she wasn't even able to see her kids when she'd split from her husband. And it's just a very sad story with a really, really tragic ending. As cycling books go, absolutely marvellous, and as I say, up there with Matt's portrayal of Marco Pantani. And also the other most recent one that I've read was Graham Watson's Tour de France Travel Guide, which is going to be coming in handy in a few weeks when I go on holiday to Normandy. But again, a really good book and a fascinating fascinating insight. As for Matt, regular people who read my my column on Road CC, fingers crossed we will get some output from Matt. Obviously very busy with what's going on at cycling at the moment, or he's just finding it really difficult to answer the question as to whether Ned and he, who are probably cycling's comedyist double act in terms of commentators, they've overtaken Phil and Paul, that's for certain, whether or not they're more Eric and Ernie or Vic and Bob, which was one of the questions that I've posed for him. So let's hope Mr. Rendell gets back to us with an answer to that. Okay, so in terms of the programme game, we'll come on to that. You can tell it's unedited, can't you? We'll come on to that in a second. Just wanted to talk a little bit about the British sportif scene, which has kind of, as I've evolved from a time trialist into a sportif rider, I just wanted to give a shout to anyone out there who rode the Kilo to Go Rut last Sunday in what I would probably describe as weather that was that wet, not even a fish would love it. Really, really tough event, fantastic course, really, really nasty twist at the end of the short route, the 70 route, a couple of nasty climbs, but right at the very end of the event there was one that was particularly steep and unpleasant, and that was just the start. It then reared on again up an unmade dirt farm track with a couple of cattle grids. It was hard at the time, but looking back on it now, fantastic experience, and one that you know gives you that bit of admiration for the riders in the East Midlands Sequel Classic, which comes around in April and is always a fantastic event. So yes, big shout out to anyone who managed to complete the long course and to the numerous people who managed to complete the short course in sufficiently better times than myself. So well done to everyone who put up with that. And interesting, really, it's the whole sportif phenomenon seems to have caught on to such an extent, really, that you can almost base the season as a local amateur cyclist around various sportives. And it's interesting that you know, would be interesting to know what people think, really, about the phenomenon and what actually we used to do with our cycling before they came along. Our, I don't know, Open Thames on the A14 in Suffolk, less well respected or less well attended now because of the amount of sportives, or are they attracting a whole new audience to cycle event? I'll be careful what I say because obviously it's not a race. Although I've never seen anyone going at a sportif at the extent that makes me think that they're not going at it as a race. But anyway, myself included, I have to say. But is it a whole new audience of non-competitive riders, shall we say, that are involved in the sportif? But fantastic event, and after enjoying the baking hot sunshine of the of their other local event, Flat Out in the Fens, back in July, to be greeted by torrential rain and battering gale force winds was particularly a shock, and it's a testament to all the people that got the event on and to all the people that turned up on the day and rode. So well done, everyone. I wanted to touch on the pro scene a little bit now. Really, I suppose the thing that you can't get away from at the moment is the whole Alberto Contador beef burger story, and it's particularly galling for someone as I've defended and stuck with the sport for year after year after year after year, only really having a proper flounce back in 98. The Festina affair killed my enthusiasm. I needed to buy a sofa, so I sold my bike. And it took me 4 or 5 years to get back in the game after that. Now I think probably it's from a legal standpoint, you have to say that Contador's, well, he's not innocent until proven guilty, is he? Because he's been proven guilty. But, you know, I suppose it makes it difficult as a game that people have to sit and constantly be reminded of drugs. Now, it could be because, and I like to think that partially this is the case, that cycling's so much better at orchestrating controls and spotting and flashing out the cheats than some of the other sports. You know, let's not forget that when Operation Puerto was launched, there were a number of high-profile Spanish sportsmen and sporting teams from other pastimes that didn't actually go down the route of getting as much exposure or getting taken to task as much as the cyclists. And I think, you know, we all know the names, and I'm biting my tongue not to mention them, but, you know, we all know the sports. Well, both got round balls, both got nets, but one of them's got a racket. So it's kind of interesting to see the different level of exposure that a sport gets, and you almost feel cycling's taking the brunt and doing all the hard work, whilst maybe some of the other sports are probably not as keen on clamping down on cheats as cycling. As for Contador, it's an interesting one. I know quite a lot of correspondence and talk on the internet has been about the fact that how can he have been doping this year because he was so less dominant. Interesting, really, unless maybe if you were in his mind and that was the case, would you possibly have panicked and thought you were going to lose maybe to Andy Schleck? It's difficult to think that he was ever really in that much trouble with a final time trial to come. But hey, who knows? You never know how some of these pro guys think. I think there's more to come on the Contador story, and hopefully if we get regular and we do another one next month, we'll talk a bit more about that, and hopefully there'll be some resolution, some proper comment, proper correspondence that has a resolution. And I think that's important for cycling on not just the Alberto Contador story, but as I'm looking at my notes on my laptop here in front of me, the Lance Armstrong story as well. So much has happened, and so much good evidence has been produced, so much flimsy evidence has been dismissed, so many teammates have come out in support, so many teammates, former teammates, have failed tests, Contador obviously himself included as a former Armstrong teammate. So where can you side on that argument, really? But I think from cycling's point of view, and even from Lance Armstrong's point of view, I think it's important that something does happen and a decision is made. This time of year is obviously always great for starting to sit back and look back over the season. And I think rather than try and maybe review the year as a whole, because you could sit down and you could talk about the weather in Paris-Nice in March, that period of sustained heavy snow was still going on in Europe at that point. You could talk about the dominance of Cancellara in the classics. Obviously, if you can judge Paris-Roubaix on its merits rather than thinking he was actually on a motorcycle, I think that's kind of died down and gone away, hasn't it? The whole electronic doping, mechanical doping, rather. And obviously the Giro, the amazing stage on the White Roads where Cadel Evans won, but looked like a Chilean miner. As in coal miner, not a Chilean child. And plenty of other things, but rather than do that, even though I've kind of half got there, is to sort of talk about Team Sky. And I think as a first season, and people are probably groaning already, oh, he's talking about Team Sky. As a first season, I think it's important probably to say the best time to judge them will be this time next year. They had a flying start. They seem, in my opinion, if I was going to be hypercritical, to have placed too much store in Greg Henderson, because I don't necessarily think he is that top front tier sprinter that maybe they need. He's never going to consistently beat Andre Greipel and Mark Cavendish unless he has a surge in his development. And I suppose in their season in a microcosm could be described almost by the Tour of Britain, and I know that that's folly to just ignore the Tour de France. But in terms of the Tour of Britain, they seem to get themselves into a great position, i.e. as they'd done at the start of this season with some good wins, but then let it slip, as they did through the middle part of the season once the Giro had got into its second week. And that Tour de France obviously was Geraint Thomas apart, pretty disastrous apart from that one break that Fletcher got into. The whole Tour of Britain thing completely baffled me, and I have sort of sat and thought about it to put it in the podcast, really, with to an extent of thinking what were the benefits and what were the losses. And I think that, and I have read a theory somewhere that Wiggins and Thomas were punished for a bad Tour de France and for pulling out of the world by being made to pull on the front of the race and do the water carrying duties, the domestique duties. I would have thought if that there was any truth in that, both of those riders would be particularly annoyed with their situation. But also, I think that the team management would have been pretty bonkers to have done that. And you go back to the stadium to state, yes, of course, Henderson won it, but Wiggins and Thomas buried themselves, and from a position where they had three riders in a breakaway that was pretty much destined to be the race-winning breakaway, they sacrificed two of them for a stage win, where logic would have said go the Vacon-Soleil route and try and protect a rider sure for the stage win, but also protect your other riders in the breakaway to try and make a race of it. I think once Salvasini won the stage into Swansea, despite that little zigzag on that manhole cover on the way down that was missed by the TV commentators, I think that Sky were always on the back foot, and the breakaway that Wiggins was in, where the Italian guy went on to win the stage, it was always a case that Wiggins' attacks were charged down, whereas the others were leaving him to chase down every other breakaway. And it's almost impossible to say judge them on their racing, because they're racing to a different set of circumstances all the time and a different set of criteria. So I do feel very sorry for them, but also, you know, some of that's been of their own making, and tactically I just didn't understand that in the Tour of Britain. Maybe I don't understand tactics though, hey. Okay, so promised 15 minutes, already gone over, which is hopefully a good sign, and hopefully you're still listening. So I'm going to wrap up the podcast now. The final thing that I did want to say was potentially a topic for discussion next time, and be great if you could get in touch through Road CC to do that, is if you had a choice of the Pro Tour teams, every single Pro Tour team, which one would you ride for and why? Okay? So I've had a little sit down and a think about that. I'll tell you that it's Garmin now, but we'll talk about the reasons and opportunities and why you would choose that, whether it's because the bike's good, the kit's good, whether it's because the whole team ethos, the team stamps on drugs, or because you would have great teammates. All of that we'll leave till next time. The one other thing I would say on the Garmin situation is that on the Podomatic page for the site, there is a PayPal donate. Now, not saying donate, not asking, only if there is enough from that to secure a Garmin jersey at any point, that will be a target reached, and from then on I will know that it's worth persisting and sticking with the podcast. So if you have got a couple of quid to chuck the way of to cover the costs of doing that and to put some money in the Garmin jersey fund, please do. Other than that, have a great time, have a great month, we'll say, and let's hope we speak again on the podcast. Thanks for your time. Bye-bye.